Hi, this is Michelle Anderson, north of Bangor, and today I'm in Presque Isle at Amato's Italian Sandwiches, which is across the street from the Braden Theater. And I'm here today with Kevin Ray, who is going to be running for the United States House of Representatives, facing a primary. And we're going to talk to Senator Ray today about that candidacy. Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Long time no see.
Exactly.
So tell me, what made you decide to run against Mike Mishu?
Well, you know, like a lot of Mainers, a lot of Americans, I see Washington as being very broken. And I look at what we've been able to accomplish in Augusta, particularly over the past 2 years, with the Republican legislature. And I see a very different scenario than what we see in Washington. And I think to myself, you know, it doesn't have to be like that. There's no reason, really, that we can't do the same thing in Washington we've done in Augusta, which is to move forward in a positive direction and to talk to people across the aisle. You may not agree with them, but the problem is, in Washington, they don't even talk. We have a president who worked with Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi to ram through Obamacare because they had the votes. They had the votes to do it. So they drove it down the throats of the Republicans. They drove it down the throats of an unwilling public. And it really, I think, established a very bitter, negative tone in Washington that now permeates everything. And our current congressman, frankly, has done nothing to improve the situation. He's not been a player on the major issues affecting Maine and the nation. And he's not, frankly, in D.C. these days, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And I think I can be a stronger voice for Maine.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, I'm the mother of a soldier.
Yep.
So I have a vested interest in war and sending our troops places. And I've been watching, and I actually called Mike about this a few times to no avail. Our president brought us to war a couple of times. The last time, I guess, was Libya, without consent of Congress. And when Congress actually asked him to come to them, he refused and said he didn't have to. There was a group of, I think, 10 House representatives who actually took it to court. Well, that just got all mucked up. But my question is this. What would you do if that happens again and you're sitting there in Congress?
Well, I would certainly be in the camp of people who believe that congressional authorization is very important to commit U.S. troops around the world. So, you know, I would err on the side of wanting Congress to be able to determine if, in fact, we are going to commit our troops elsewhere in the globe.
And if he said, no, thank you, I'm not going to appear before Congress, I mean, is there some option, or do you...
Well, it's been, obviously, a long time pull between the executive and the legislative branches.
As it was set up to be.
Yes, exactly. There's a healthy tension there. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that Congress, as being the voice of the people, the representative of the people, has a legitimate role in determining when the use of force and the commitment of U.S. troops is appropriate. And I would be in the camp of wanting to make sure that we had that opportunity and it was done in the correct way.
Okay. I have another pet peeve here.
Yeah.
The way the Constitution's set up, the House of Representatives is where budgetary and money matters come and not the Senate.
Where they initiate, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Now, if you look back from, say, 2007 on, you can see that several of those things were actually originated in the Senate. I think the TARP bill was one of them. Some of the big money items. And I'm wondering, what do you do? What do you do as a representative? What would you do when your powers, your responsibilities, and your duties are usurped by the other House? Do you allow that? Do you stand up and give a press conference? How important is that sort of thing?
Well, you certainly have to stand up and be counted. I mean, there are a number of ways that you can do that. You can do that by, filing resolutions. You can do it by using the bully pulpit, going to the press. You can participate in lawsuits. You can do, there are a number of things that you can do to ensure that your voice is heard and that the Constitution is protected.
Okay, so you wouldn't just let it slide?
No, I don't believe in letting things slide. I think if you talk to people who have served with me in the Maine legislature and the Maine Senate over the past 7.5 years, you would find out that I'm a person who doesn't believe in letting things slide.
So what sets you apart from Mike? What are the big differences that you see, or even the small differences, the important differences?
Well, we just have a different perspective on the role of government, the appropriate role of government. Mike has been down the line, party line guy, supporting President Obama, Nancy Pelosi, in their agenda for expanding the federal government, for increasing spending, and for growing this debt, this deficit. We're looking at more than a trillion dollar a year deficits, which have now reached the point where the national debt is closing in on $16 trillion. Most of us can't even conceive of how many zeros and commas that is and what that means, a staggering amount in terms of money. But he has been a reliable party line vote for President Obama and Nancy Pelosi. And I think that is the wrong direction. If you look at my record in the legislature, I've been somebody who's pushed for fiscal responsibility, for making sure government doesn't grow too big and too intrusive in people's lives, whereas Mike seems to be perfectly happy with growing government and seeing it take on greater and greater role. I would also point, in terms of the major differences, for instance, small business. You know, Maine is a state where 98% of our businesses are small businesses. And yet, when it comes to small business issues in the United States Congress, our congressman in 2011 achieved a rating of zero from the National Federation of Independent Business. And that means that he couldn't find a single issue in the course of a year where he could stand with Maine's struggling small businesses. At a time of the worst economy in our lifetime, businesses failing, struggling to stay afloat, to keep providing employment for Mainers and vitality for our communities, and he helped make it more difficult. Contrast that with my position, and I've had 100% rating from NFIB, meaning each and every time when there's been an issue of importance to Maine small businesses, I have stood with them and led the charge sponsoring LD1 regulatory reform, led the charge for reining in taxes in a way that can help business be more competitive in Maine. So I think that's probably the greatest single difference in terms of the role of government and the role of government in whether or not it makes it easier or more difficult for small businesses to create jobs and vitality.
Clearly, and we've spoken before, you believe Obamacare is the wrong way to go. What do you think is the right way to go?
Yeah, Obamacare is the wrong way to go. A top-down government-run approach is not what people are looking for in this country. But there are a lot of things that we can do because we do have problems in healthcare. Healthcare needs to be accessible.
Is it healthcare or healthcare insurance?
Well, it's healthcare coverage primarily, but there are problems with healthcare too, just in terms of cost drivers. You know, people need to have more choice and competition in healthcare so they can shop, be wise shoppers, and help keep costs down for themselves. But particularly with respect to healthcare coverage, there are a lot of things that we could have come together on as a country. Republicans and Democrats could have embraced, moved forward in a positive, constructive way. Rather, President Obama and Mike Michoud and their allies drove Obamacare down our throats. We could have, for instance, just made sure that people can buy health care coverage across state lines. We could encourage states to offer high-risk pools, such as the guaranteed access pool that we just passed here in Maine, so that people who have chronic conditions, pre-existing illnesses, can find affordable health care coverage. And we could allow small businesses to pool together in association health plans so that they would have more bargaining power.
That's not allowed now?
Yep, that's one of the reforms that Republicans have been pushing for.
Okay.
And that's something common sense. Both sides should be able to agree on it. But, of course, you have people who don't want private market solutions. They're looking for government-run solutions, single-payer, and things like that. So I think that's the wrong direction to move in.
What about bailouts? Not, God willing, we won't have those again. But, you know, an industry is in trouble. What do you think the federal government's role is?
Yeah, I think frankly, that the experience with bailouts in the recent years with the economic crisis have left Americans with a bad taste, rightfully so. I think that, you know, we need to really think before the government gets involved. For instance, if you look at banking and the availability of credit, and you look at what the how the federal government got involved to quote-unquote solve a problem, in fact what they have done through the Dodd-Frank's bill is to make it worse. They have affected the availability of credit for small business, for homeowners, you know, I think making it more difficult to achieve the American dream. So I'm very cautious about thinking that Congress needs to get in the middle of everything that goes on and try to make it better, because usually when they try to make it better, well, that's not exactly the result.
What are your feelings on the Patriot Act?
I certainly understand. I've been asked that question two or three times in recent days. You know, 9-1-1 affected all of us. It affected the American psyche. And the fact is, we do live in a post-9/11 world. It's not 9/10, unfortunately. It's post-9/11. So I understand the ability, the reasons for being vigilant and to make sure that we are rooting out those forces that would kill, as we saw in 9/11, thousands of innocent Americans. Mm-hmm. They're still out there. We're still at risk. But we have to be very cautious not to overstep in a way that tramples on the Constitution or on the rights of due process. So I think as a country and certainly as a Congress, we have to proceed cautiously in our effort, in our zeal, in our determination to protect the American people. Make sure that we don't go too far.
And how do you do that? How do you find that?
Well, you have to, I think you just have to weigh the issues. You know, you can't rush into things. You have to really read and understand the implications of bills that come before you.
Like get it in time to actually read them?
Yeah, sort of like the opposite of what Nancy Pelosi did with Obamacare, when she said, well, we have to pass it to see what's in it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It says a lot about how Washington works these days. But we need, you know, examine the issues, be thoughtful, think it through, listen to both sides. You know, there are folks on one side of an issue raising alarm bells, hear them out. Because even if you don't agree with them 100%, there's probably some element of truth in it that
right.
you can discern and try to strike that right balance.
Since we mentioned reading the bill, is that something that you would try to do?
Well, certainly, if you are passing a major bill, like, for instance, Obamacare, how many of the Democrats who voted for Obamacare, and I say Democrats because no Republicans voted for it,
right.
how many of the Democrats who voted for that bill actually had a sense of what was in it?
I think Stupak claimed to have read it. And
he must be a speed reader.
What I went. Did you have time?
Right. I mean, when you had Nancy Pelosi, the then Speaker of the House, say, dismiss that whole thing and say, well, really, we have to pass it
right.
To see what's in it.
So you would resist that?
Defies logic. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is you deal with a lot of bills.
Yeah.
And it's difficult at best to sit and read every single bill. But you have a committee process, and that is incumbent upon the committees. In the main legislature, when I served on the committee, we went through every bill. I mean, commas, prepositions. You have to do that, or you can change the entire meaning of a bill.
Right.
And so you have to have people on these committees who are willing to invest the time and energy that it takes to understand the implications of the bills that they're passing through their committees.
Do you know who Jason Amash is? He's a congressman out of Michigan, and he made a pledge when he was running that he would never vote on a bill without explaining to his constituency via his blog exactly what the issues were and how he came to the conclusion that he did. He's been in for 2 years now, I believe, and he's not failed. He's done that in every case. And I'm wondering, when you look at that versus the non-transparency or the I mean, I call Mike Michoud frequently to find out, well, what were you thinking when you did that? What? Why did you do this? I can't get an answer other than a form letter, which lately I don't even get those. So I'm wondering, on what end of the spectrum would you be willing to be?
With respect to explaining bills? Well, I think you have a responsibility.
Your
sure, at least your thought process. Mm-hmm. People may not agree with it.
Right.
But, you know, I get a lot of emails and phone calls from constituents I have since I've been in office, lots of times asking why did I vote a certain way, and I'm always willing to explain my vote. And you do have to have, in your own mind, you have to have a reason for why you vote the way you do. And when you serve the public, I think you have a responsibility to share those reasons.
Okay, so you would?
Yes,
okay.
Yes, absolutely. And I have in the Maine legislature.
I think it's a little bit bigger where you're going.
Well, it is. It's certainly, I will tell you, having you know, I spent time as Olympia Snow's chief of staff on Capitol
mm-hmm.
Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm familiar with the ways of Washington. I was there for 6 years. And when I got back home and ended up running and serving in the Maine Senate, I found out there are a lot of similarities.
Yeah.
There are different issues. You're dealing with state issues versus federal or global, you know, international issues. And obviously, it's a larger, Congress is a larger body than the Maine legislature. But the process, the thought process, and the way you approach it are very similar. You're representing your constituents, trying to solve problems. And I found there are more similarities than differences.
Wonderful. If you had just, if you could give me no more than 5 words of why I should vote for Kevin Ray, what would that be? A small sentence is what I'm saying. You can go to six words if you want.
Kevin Ray will be a stronger voice for Maine.
Excellent.
Mike Michoud, in 10 years, has twice been named to the list of the most obscure members of Congress. This is a seat that was once held by Margaret Chase Smith, Bill Cohen, Olympia Snow, people who rose to national prominence standing up for Maine and Maine values. And I believe we can do better, and we can have somebody who will be a stronger voice for Maine.
Kevin Ray, thank you so much for your time. And hopefully, after the primary, should you prevail, I will be interviewing you again.
I hope so. Look forward to it.
Great. Thank you so much. This is Michelle Anderson, north of Bangor, and I'm asking you to stick around for the next time I talk to someone who can tell us about the issues that interest us north of Bangor.